Is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Israel says they have no intention of launching a strike against Iranian nuclear installations, according to a top official of Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Sharon made the comments during talks with a visiting delegation from the Congress, our Congress, despite months of press reports to the contrary. Israel has no intention of attacking Iran and continues to support the diplomatic efforts of the international community, in particular the United States, to stop Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. Earlier this month, Britain's Sunday Times reported that Israel has drawn up plans for a combined air and ground attack on Iranian nuclear sites should diplomatic efforts fail to halt Tehran's alleged nuclear program. In a moment, our guest will be Stephen Quayle, author of a number of books, the most recent, and this one will chill you, Lucifer's Luggage, Suitcase Nukes in America. Stephen Quayle is an author. For more than 30 years, he's been investigating ancient civilizations, giants, UFOs, and biological warfare as they relate to the future of mankind. Stephen discusses the worst-case scenarios approaching the world and how they interrelate to each other, earthquakes, volcanoes, nuclear, and biological terrorism, coupled with planned financial meltdowns of the U.S. dollar, thrusting all of us into unimagined tribulations. Stephen Quayle is on record as stating that we have moved from the realm of natural threats into the arena of supernaturally guided events of the unseen hand of evil, orchestrating world events of unfathomable proportions. Our guest, Stephen Quayle. Stephen, and before we get going, how's your wife?
Well, she's doing really, really well, George, and I'd like to thank you for mentioning what had happened to her a couple weeks ago when she broke her shoulder in four places skiing. And I want to thank all of the Coast to Coast listeners that sent me emails and cards wishing her the best and praying for her. And she's had a remarkable recovery. She still is in a permanent handshake position for a couple more weeks as she goes to therapy. But it's been amazing. And again, I'm just really, really grateful for all of the wonderful Coast listeners that had sent me so many emails and cards just saying they were praying for her and they wish her the best. So she's healing really well.
What did she do? Did she run into a tree or something?
No, she's a good skier, but in Bozeman's been so weird lately. We have a ski hill called Bridger Bowl, and our weather was alternating between really, really cold during the days, and the sun would come out up on the hill, and it would melt and then freeze again. So she hit some ice and absolutely just slammed her onto the ground, and she hit head first and basically tore a rotator cuff and smashed her shoulder, her humerus, up in four areas or four different places. So, you know, it was one of those things. But interesting, when I took her to the hospital, there must have been about eight people in the hospital that had broken legs, broken arms, broken shoulders. And so we ended up finally having to take her to Billings to the experts down there, which is a fantastic group of orthopedic surgeons. So, you know, it worked out for the best, but our weather here has been so extreme that it's phenomenal. Billings, Montana is 130 miles east of me, and last week when I took her down there for a check, it was 85 degrees. Now, that's about 20 degrees to 25 degrees.
Yeah, that's warmer. Crazy. That is crazy. I think the Midwest is going to be hit with a lot of tornadoes this year, a lot of severe weather, too.
Absolutely, and, you know, we're seeing so many different anomalies taking place, egg-sized hail in China, obviously multiple volcanoes going off in the South Pacific. And as you know, George, I sent you a map that Standeo had detailed for me showing the intersection of all the major earthquakes over 5.0 in the last 30 days as they intersect in the Sumatra area. And what's amazing today, now this is astonishing in my opinion, is that the son of Krakatoa, which is called Anak Krakatoa, which went off in 1883, one of the largest recorded volcanic explosions in the world, it became active today. And that is, a heads up. I've been trying to get the people's attention. You know, living in Bozeman, I'm right on, quote, the super volcano edge of Yellowstone. But it was fascinating to me that even in watching the Discovery Channel presentation of the super volcano that, is projected for Yellowstone, they're avoiding the one that basically, meaning they, whether it's the BBC or the Discovery Channel folks, the bottom line is they're avoiding the potential for a massive, massive explosion worldwide in the South Pacific. And as we speak tonight, again, in the last 3 days, three new volcanoes have come alive. You know, Indonesia's got 132 active volcanoes. It's got 17,000 islands, 242 million people, and this place is roaring, literally. So I want people to really pay attention to what's going on. Stan Deo, prior to the December 26th earthquake, was saying that he was seeing sea surface temperature anomalies that were building up and the pressure that was building up on the fault lines down in that whole region and that he'd never seen before. And on my website, he did an animation of all of the water temperature anomalies for the last 8 days. And all I can tell you is something big, something never seen before. Stan's monitoring this stuff for 9 or 10 years now, is getting ready to happen. So if people want to see what we're talking about, they need to go on my website, which I think they can get to through your website, and look at the different diagrams that Stan has put up. Because, again, this is a very serious group of events taking place. When I say group of events, we've had Mount St. Helens on and off, as you know.
Yeah, something's happening to the planet.
Absolutely. And it's electrical in nature. You know, we're getting reports of gamma ray bursts. And I've been especially following the Russians. You know, the Russians don't have, George, the same degree of control over their scientific community or the world of academia that we have over ours. And there are scientists who are world-class, phenomenally brilliant, saying we have a real problem going on. And for most people, they might like to know this, that back in 1750, a gentleman by the name of William Stukeley, S-T-U-K-E-L-E-Y, proposed that all earthquakes were electrical. You remember the Kobe earthquake and
sure
people
do.
Were talking about the ground lightning?
Yep.
I mean, when you start reading some of these, when I say old guys in the 1750s, and they're basically saying that all earthquakes are an electrical function, you know, that's something that's been poo-pooed by modern science. I think the more things change, the more people are going to be forced to realize that the ancients and even our 200 to 300-year-old scientists knew quite a bit more than they're given credit for.
Could be a cycle, though, Stephen. What do you think?
Well, cycles, you have to look at a historic cycle. You look at everything in perspective, obviously, to see are there parallels. And, for instance, on undersea volcanoes going off for the past 100 years, that, you know, obviously recording's gotten better, but even in the last 10 years, we've gone from having, let's say, 50 to 100 to 7,000 undersea volcanoes going off last month. 7,000.
You theorize that some of these events that are occurring, which are horribly natural, but that could be a synchronized signal to go after the United States.
Yes, I do. It was only last week that one of the mullahs was talking about a situation that the East Coast is going to disappear. And you remember the stories that have come out of the scientific community largely in Europe that the Cumbre Vieja volcano on the Canary Islands are really a transient, or they're, excuse me, they're in a transitional phase. And it was almost like the inference was made that there will be some attempt to help it out. And you and I have talked about the black wind for so long,
yes,
for so many years now, that now there are specific websites referring to the volcanic explosions that are going to pretty much supposedly wipe out the West. And I think that people have got to understand that this isn't speculation about the, we don't know when it will happen, but it seems to be that the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and some of the very active regions off the Canary Islands are heating up right now. So I think this is a triggering mechanism. I think it's very much a telling mechanism telling, meaning as the things become more tumultuous and the events start to take place on even a greater basis, that, you know, George, we're in for some really tough times. And I got to share this. We're not just seeing normal events. You know, you have to look back in history. You asked if it was a cycle. When's the last time 300,000 people died in a tsunami?
Absolutely. You know, a couple weeks ago, Stephen, I went to Hawaii for an event at our great stations there. And on the way back, it's about a five-hour-plus flight from Hawaii to Los Angeles. We had such a tailwind that we got back in 4 hours. Even the pilot was amazed. I mean, it was almost like we were a rocket ship. We just took off, got into some jet stream, and I mean, literally, we flew across the Pacific Ocean. And I don't think they have ever seen things like this in a long time.
Well, I got to tell you, that's unusual. And even as the pilots will tell you, it's nothing to pick up, a 7,500-mile-an-hour tailwind, maybe even 125-mile-an-hour tailwind. But what you're talking about, again, is one of those events that, taken individually, maybe, you know, not a big deal. But when you take it in the context that, listen, the ocean temperatures drive the weather system of this planet. And what basically the people in the Navy do is they have all their buoys, all their sensors in the ocean, and they continually monitor that. And when the hot water and the cold water come together, especially over stresses, there is an electrical event that's created. And it's fascinating, George, because, you know, there are 11 subsea floor trenches around the world. The deepest spot in the ocean is about 36,000 feet deep off the Philippines in the Mariana Islands and the Mariana Trench. And I was remarking that I think that something's going on in the trenches, because Grand Cayman Island, which is, by the way, the central banking capital of the world now, probably equal to Switzerland in some respect, is having multiple earthquakes. And they sit right on literally the edge of the abyss called the Cayman Trench, which is 26,000 feet deep. So it seems like there's activity. We've got two levels of quakes. We've got the deep quakes taking place at 100 kilometers, and then we've got the shallow ones. And when I asked Stan, I said, would you make me a graph of shallow earthquakes increasing or decreasing? And based on the last 30 days, the shallow quakes, which are the ones that do the most damage, are increasing dramatically.
Edgar Cayce once said that the coasts of the United States would change dramatically. And a lot of people have been sitting back wondering whatever happened to that prophecy, some even saying that he was wrong. I'm not so sure he was wrong, Stephen.
Well, I basically can tell you this in talking to submariners and captains of submarines and explorers, guys who'd use submersibles, deep sea explorers. There is a lot that people don't understand about the coastlines and about the hollowing out and the precarious nature, especially of the West Coast. That's why when the 3,000 earthquakes were taking place off of Ecuador a little over a month ago or so, it was astonishing, George, that the USGS didn't even pick up on that, nor did they pick up initially on the fact that there were a cluster of quakes off the Oregon coast. They even dispatched, you know, some ships to actually watch the volcanic action taking place. Now, again, what people have got to understand is these are world-changing events that are taking place, have taken place, and the situation that is brewing in the South Pacific, I mean, we're talking about literally changing the weather, changing the seasons, and also the tsunami damage that's already being projected. According to some Russian scientists, they are claiming that hundreds of millions of people, those are their numbers, not mine, are in a potential harm's way from the event. The event that's supposed to take place in the South Pacific is over a 10.0 earthquake. And I don't think people understand the amount of energy that a 10.0 earthquake would generate. That would be 1 trillion tons of TNT.
There is a Russian woman who has an internet site that, when you read it on the face of it, she seems to be so preposterously way out there, you don't know if there's any validity to the stories. her most recent story, Stephen, is that she says that both Russians and United States people, that we are shooting missiles, blasting them up in space because of some concern of some kind of cosmic ray that could hit us. And she cites a story that 450 million years ago, which is true, there might have been a cosmic burst for 10 seconds that destroyed the ozone layer, and therefore the sun killed off life and vegetation and everything like that. But, you know, her website is just, it is way out there on some things, but I have not heard anything about a joint operation to do that. Have you?
Yes, I have, because I have heard that we are experiencing specifically the same type of bombardment. You know, it's fascinating because Sorsha Fall, that's the young woman's name, her brother was uniquely had an accident, a helicopter accident, like General Alexander Lebed. So I know that some of her information is coming from, Russian military and intelligence sources.
Well, is she accurate or is she a storyteller?
Basically, she's an investigative reporter. Now, all of her stuff, some of her stuff is way out there, but some of it is absolutely verifiable by independent third-party stuff, especially the gamma burst radiation, the intense fog banks, George. You know, she's been talking about that. Places that never have fog having lingering fog for 4 and 5 days. And if earthquakes truly are electrical, and I believe we live in an electrical universe, and we're being bombarded with, intense cosmic radiation, which are gamma rays, then that's going to alter a lot of things. It can actually take, with that type of cosmic ray bombardment, there have been scientists who have been screaming at the top of their lungs that when you get new viruses and new pathogens, you're getting set for mutagenic properties in viruses of things we've never seen before. So I would say this, I can't say that everything she says and wouldn't is right on, but I can say that there's enough that's right on that I pay attention to some of the things that she says when I can validate it or verify it through third parties.
The Canary Islands, the possibility of a tsunami, I've talked to some seismologists. They say if it does go and it goes the way that they think it could, you're talking about 6-foot-high tsunamis that would go 50 miles inland on the eastern coast of the United States.
Absolutely. And the question is, depending on how much of that undersea mountain sloughs that's, right off the island, the bottom line is that you've probably heard the same things. They're talking the initial height of the wave could be upwards of 150 to 200 feet initially before it fans out across the eastern seaboard. So these are real instances. And, think back 10 years. No one was concerned about this stuff 10 years ago. And now it's my contention, too, that with all the hoopla over Yellowstone Park, I've flown over Yellowstone Park and photographed it in infrared where the supposed lake bulges. And I can tell you, George, that lake is frozen over until probably the middle of May, depending on temperature. And there is no thermal reading that you'd expect if there was a magma chamber that was getting ready to release. And the lake is the best example of, because that's where all of the studies have gone on that, you remember when the big bulge was going to go off and
yes,
everything was going to happen? And I've tried to tell people it's not going to erupt. The all of the events that even they discussed in the movie are now taking place pretty much in the South Pacific. And so I'm concerned that Yellowstone is a sleight of hand. In other words, it's to occupy us and worry us with something that we really shouldn't be focusing our emotional effort on, and to keep us from seeing the real situation. Listen, if what happens in the South Pacific takes place, the Straits of Malacca are one of the most important transit areas for gas, natural gas, oil, and what would happen is you would have a tremendous worldwide financial shock based on those straits being closed down. Now, you remember after December 26th, we were getting reports not only of the USS San Francisco running aground and killing those sailors on board one of our subs because basically something appeared in the water that was never there before. But we've also gotten reports from people that work on oil wells, oil drilling platforms in the ocean that they're seeing very strange movements and very strange anomalies. And so the point is that We are now faced with, I would say, a real situation in the South Pacific that very few people are paying real attention to because, heck, everybody knows that's, 12,000 miles away. But that's where people need to be looking. Yellowstone, at this point, has no indications that it's ready to go off in any way, shape, or form.
Updates there from Stephen Quayle on some earth changes. Up next with him, Lucifer's Luggage, Suitcase Nukes in America.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Still interested in that After Dark CD? Well, there's a couple ways you can pick it up. By the way, there are two CDs included in the packet. And it includes bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, some funny ones, some scary ones, and some ghost stories. Go to www.afterdarkcd.com. That's a quick way for you, afterdarkcd.com. Or you can also call this toll-free number, 800-598-2331, 800-598-2331. Now, this is for the After Dark CD. Well, Stephen, your latest book, Lucifer's Luggage, Suitcase Nukes in America, something you have talked about for some time now on the program, and you've decided to capsulize it into this book. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, first of all, my book is a response to the duplicity and almost schizophrenic nature of the public's knowledge, the knowledge that's being given to the public, which I maintain is so false and so far off base that I think people should know the truth. The truth is, George, everybody's saying, well, they're worried about Iran getting their centrifuges up and getting their nuclear fuel from Russia. The issues out there are these devices exist. After the breakup of the Soviet Union, it was an open bazaar, a weapons bazaar. Anybody who had the money could buy anything they wanted because, as you're aware, you've heard the stories of everything from Russian military to Russian politicians saying, hey, our country's falling apart, we need to make money, so we'll sell basically the family jewels. And when it came to selling the family jewels out of the former Soviet Union, it basically boiled down to nuclear weapons and nuclear technology, nuclear scientists, and biological weapons and biological scientists. I want to read you something that got me blasted off the air. I don't think it will now because this got 1999. I'm going to read you an Associated Press quick article to put this into perspective.
All right.
because it's really that important. You know, everybody's saying, oh, boy, we're just moments away. We're just moments away or a week away, a month away from Iran having nuclear weapons. This is an Associated Press article dated January 17, 1999. Satellites have detected numerous signs of a major impact located in the hills of northwestern Iran. We are pretty sure that this was an intended nuclear explosion, Jody Birmingham said, a spokesman for the Department of Enhanced Satellite Technology. When questioned by the press, the White House had no comment, nor did the Pentagon. Iranian officials have declined to speak with the Associated Press. That article stayed up for less than 1 hour, and it was totally sanitized. I have a physical hard copy of it, which I've read from. The issue isn't which nations are going to, quote, be able to build the nuclear weapons. It's which nations have already acquired the nuclear weapons. And it was fascinating. When I first started talking about this, and actually when you guys were kind enough at Coast to bring me on, it would seem like every time I would speak of these, it'd have in the days following somebody from one of the intelligence agencies of the FBI saying, oh, we don't believe those things exist, meaning a nuclear small man portable nuclear weapons. Well, that's pretty strange because we've had what are called atomic demolitions for almost 50 years in the United States.
Oh, sure. You can see some of the craters from satellite photos.
Absolutely. And so I really got mad. And let me tell you a story that I think the Coast, your listeners, and it will put everything into perspective because this is a true story. The last time I got challenged by somebody in the intelligence community nationally, they said that these things didn't exist. I went to a friend of mine who is a lawyer on Madison Avenue, actually Park Avenue, and he basically had a lot to do with nuclear weapons verification inspection. And I said to him, his name is Gary, I'll only use his first name. I said, Gary, I need copies of manuals and photographs of the Soviet nuclear suitcases. I said, all we see is the ones that they make that you've seen Kurt Weldon and others holding, which is basically just an attaché case.
Sure.
With a cylinder in it. I'm sure you've seen the pictures.
Right.
The bottom line is, Gary says, Steve, I'll get them because I know a lot of people that from my old days that there's nothing wrong with trying to get, you know, what you want. Basically, I don't read or write Russian, but I just wanted the photographs of them, and I wanted the manuals that basically were given to the Spetsnaz agents to, you know, tell, you know, a little bit about them. Well, to make a long story short, my friend's Russian did not translate as effectively as he thought it would, George. And you probably know where the story went. His entire penthouse law offices were trash because the word he used for manual wasn't right. To make a long story short, by going out and trying to get the photographs, I want to make this clear, just the photographs, the instruction manual, the whole office of my friend was trash. Well, after everybody got explained, and obviously you can bet every agency in the world was involved in that one.
Trashed or raided?
Well, both, okay?
Yeah.
Initially raided by the bad guys and then trashed by the other guys that thought maybe the first group of guys didn't, you know, find what they were looking for. It turned out to be a big, when I say joke, to everybody involved. But again, I found it pretty interesting that people would go to that much, effort to try and dispose of something that supposedly didn't exist. So that's what got me going on writing Lucifer's Luggage. And the thing that I deal with in Lucifer's Luggage is obviously the history of this stuff, the threats, where it's headed, where it's going. Red Mercury, another famous story. Red Mercury, Sam Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb. A neutron bomb is one of the most unusual weapons, I think, that we had in our nuclear arsenal. And I put it in past tense because it doesn't kill by the normal fission or fusion process. It uses extreme neutron bombardment, which penetrates living matter and kills people by intense radiation exposure. To make a long story short, the Russians devised a substance called mercury antimony oxide, or red mercury. Red mercury isn't mercury that you just basically add food coloring to and produce this excessively powerful weapon. Red mercury started to come into its prominence when the intelligence agencies were picking up the fact that the Soviets had produced a weapon that was the size of a baseball that was in the 1 to 2 kiloton range.
The size of a baseball?
The size of a baseball, actually a softball. And so, again, then came the story, well, there is no such thing. Well, I got news for you. When you talk to a nuclear physicist of Sam Cohen's caliber, and Sam Cohen obviously worked on the Manhattan Project with Oppenheimer and all those guys and General Groves, what happened is that, he said unequivocally, Steve, this stuff exists. So then there was a major move on to try and persuade everybody in the West that this stuff didn't exist. Well, basically, George, it went on the black market. And this brings us to the whole understanding that there's a lot of things out there that are continually denied. We got sideswiped in the intelligence organizations due to what I call catastrophic intelligence failure. During the Cold War, and especially during the Clinton years, and by the way, I'm not blaming the Clinton administration for this because it happened under President Bush Sr.'s watch also, but during that time, more and more our intelligence that used to rely so much on human intelligence, i.e. spies in the field, changed, as you know, to high-tech spies. And the high-tech spies simply didn't realize, our government didn't realize that there were limitations. They tried to do everything on a higher technology basis, and basically they wanted to do it in a cleaner, more sanitary way. Well, red mercury and the suitcase nukes and the backpack nukes, the man-portable atomic demolitions, that all went under the radar until it started showing up on the black market. When it started showing up on the black market is when I started dealing with interviewing the different people, because quite candidly, I got tired of people saying, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, I don't know what I'm talking about, but how about this guy that basically claims to be one of the guys that sold them? To make a long story short, Lucifer's Luggage deals with the prevalent possession of these weapons, and the concern that I have is absolutely one that it's not that they're going to be snuck into the country. They're already here. Under Louis Freeh's watch of the FBI, former director of the FBI, he was questioned in congressional hearings about the revelations that after the breakup of the Soviet Union, the Soviets, the Spetsnaz, had placed not only suitcase nukes in this country, but they had also placed real warheads throughout the country in different areas.
Do we know where they are?
Well, let me share this with you. That was the number one question that nobody, including the director of the FBI, seemed to want to ask. Now, the Swiss asked it, and we're told. The Germans asked it, and we're told. Vasily Matrokhin was a KGB archivist during the Cold War years, and he defected. It's kind of like, if you had the keeper of the secrets coming and telling you all the secrets, that's who defected. And he went before Congress, he went before the different intelligence agencies and told them of this stuff. And again, the FBI initially did not take him serious. I can't tell you that anybody else ever followed up, but it kind of is one of those stories that just died. And now we have terrorism, we've got the situation with the concern, as you know, with our ports, only 2% to 3% of all of the containers that come in are checked. The nuclear issue has become, in my opinion, the single most pressing subject that needs an answer to, because what people don't realize is that if one nuclear weapon goes off, and you and I have talked about this so many times, that Tommy Franks' statement that the experiment we've known as liberty and freedom will come to an end, that's what's at stake here.
How come when this Pakistani scientist gave away and sold nuclear secrets to the Iranians, nobody did anything to him? I mean, he's scot-free.
Absolutely.
And how do we know he hasn't sold information and technology to terrorists, to Al-Qaeda, and to other groups?
Well, he has, and that's the deal. See, it's kind of an amazing trade-off, and I don't think there's any common sense or any rationale. It's known that the scientist Khan, K-H-A-N, basically gave to Libya, gave to China, North Korea, everybody that was out there that was in the market for nuclear weapons technology and specific components, that basically they were like the traveling Tin Man for radioactive weaponry. And what's astonishing, as you know, you probably know this, that he's a national hero in Pakistan, and then we know that Al-Qaeda has had a real presence in Pakistan and still does, and that the different tribes in Pakistan, some of them still harbor the Taliban. And what the most astonishing story I know is when we went into Afghanistan and had basically the Taliban surrounded, the Pakistanis made a request to the U.S. government to fly them out on Russian transports to get them out of Afghanistan into Pakistan. Big story. But again, these are the kind of stories that that grab my attention and I try and bring to my readers' attention so they get a feel for what's really going on. I think it's never, never land, George, when it comes to America's intelligence policies. I think that it's never, never land, meaning that it's a fantasy world because, again, we've seen nothing but what have we seen now? We've seen the overhauling, supposedly, of the FBI, the overhauling of the CIA. Now we've got Negroponte being proposed as the intelligence czar. And if you've got fighting within your ranks, and how do you put an end to that fighting? And we've had a mass exodus of some of the best, what I'd say, spies and intelligence gathering individuals in the world. Now we have Jerome Corsi writing his book, Atomic Iran, and I'm telling everybody, Iran has been atomic and had weapons for the last 6 years, and now they've got the, courtesy of the Ukrainians, they've got the cruise missiles, and I can tell you that the situation with Sharon being at the Texas ranch of our president is a very worrisome event in my eyes because he brought one of his generals showing supposedly the satellite photos right. and other intelligence of what's going on in Iran.
Even though he did say that Israel would not attack, but he did say not unilaterally, he's looking for support.
Right, and basically, as you know, it seems like every week, here's the story, Israel's going to attack, Israel isn't going to attack. Then basically Iran comes out and says, Tehran says, it'll be your worst nightmare, and we'll turn you into a sea of living hell. And then we have the situation with the announcements from our government that an atomic Iran will not be tolerated. Again, the point that is disturbing to me is: do you remember when Colin Powell went before the United Nations Security Council with the satellite photos of Iraq?
Oh yeah, and he admits that was wrong.
He admits it's wrong. See, the problem is right now we've got a situation brewing in the Middle East that's incredibly troublesome. And as you know, and you and I have spoken about this on Coast to Coast together, the economic implications of an oil shutoff to the United States would be catastrophic. Since the last time we spoke, George, Venezuela has already stated that they're looking for a new market for their oil, i.e. China.
Sure.
They stated they're going to sell their Citgo refineries. They own 8 refineries in the United States. They basically have made the statement in the last 48 hours that they're getting their citizen militia of 1.5 million people ready for the U.S. invasion. Chavez is on record as stating that the United States is trying to kill him. He says if he dies, the entire tanker fleet that supports the United States with Venezuelan crude oil is going to be blown up, and now there's talk that he's going to sell the refineries in the United States to the Chinese. Well, I don't think our government's going to let that happen.
Probably not. Let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. But see, look at the gas prices. I mean, I think aren't you guys paying in California now about close to $2.99, $2.89 a gallon?
Yeah, it's gone way up. It's out of control.
Yeah. And see, now, people send emails all day long saying, well, why if oil's back down to $51 a barrel, why are the gas prices staying high? And, you know, again, the bottom line is it's kind of a strange scenario. Obviously, oil hit $58 a barrel in the recent future, close to $58 a barrel, and then you probably saw that Goldman Sachs came out and said oil's going to $105.
Yeah. Yeah,
and for Goldman Sachs to say that, one of the gentlemen that I respect, who's pretty aware, said, "Well, that was to cover their position in the futures market because they had gone long, and it was." And listen, when somebody like that makes a statement, I mean, Goldman Sachs makes a statement of oil at $105 a barrel. That's astonishing. That translates out to everybody's benefit to $5 to $6 a gallon.
Yeah, and you know what? They push it, they feed it. And I've always believed though that there's a conspiracy here, Stephen, because they get it up to $2.75, $3 a gallon, drop it down 30 cents a gallon. Everybody thinks it's a bargain, yet it's still at record rates.
Absolutely, it's the old three steps forward, two steps backward, you still, or one step backward, you're still,
they're still
steps
ahead. They are still ahead.
And talking about, again, people have got to understand that, look, it's not an idealistic world that ideals drive the market. It's basically greed and it's power. The first thing Vladimir Putin did less than a year ago was take over Yukos Oil. Yukos is one of the biggest oil companies in the world. And then he formed what's called the BRIC Alliance, which is Brazil, Russia, India, and China. When you get China and India out there bidding for the oil that they need, because they're obviously growing nations, and we all know that China's economy is superheated, that makes kind of a tense situation, because there's a given amount of oil available in any given day, providing that there aren't new gushers coming online, and there aren't any right now. The bottom line is people are going to bid up the price of that oil, just like they bid up steel, they bid up gold, they bid up silver, they bid up all commodities. The commodity index, the CRB index, is up in the 300s, and it hasn't been like that for 25 years. So now what we have is we have a situation where we've got reports every day, as you know, we've got now this virus or that virus. We've got this nuclear threat or that nuclear threat. We've got the rest of the world saying to the United States, you guys quit being bullies and quit stealing other countries' natural resources. And you know that's the way the rest of the world looks at us. That is the way we are seen, George, throughout the world.
Well, and I know, and does that then mean that we are creating this problem, or that we're really trying to defend against something that is existing? It's a tough question, Stephen. And I've always believed, though, that under the root of all this, be it terrorist nukes, suitcase nukes, I still think there's a group of people, some in our country, some Europeans, some Asians, who would like to topple our way of government, our society. Those people, I believe, are the ones that are pulling the purse strings, financing the terrorists, and the people like the Osama bin Ladens, who may never be heard from again, merely are carrying out the dastardly deeds of these people. That's my thought.
I agree with you 100%. As you know, I'm not just saying that, but when Alex and I were on your show on the Roundtable, we basically said this is the group of people doing this, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to increase their power, increase their control over the planet.
And increase their profits. We'll be back in a moment. We'll continue the dialogue with Stephen Quayle, Lucifer's Luggage.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with StreamLink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.